Madam Clarkson, it is indeed a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. I think a lot of Radio Canada International. I think it's a very important presence in the world, and I think that we are very fortunate to be able to have it.
Well, thank you very much. We're here to talk about your book. In fact, we're here to talk about your life, because the book is your autobiography. For someone who sort of kept yourself in the background a little bit, You're writing this book about your life. You're revealing yourself. What was that like as an experience for you to remember these things and put yourself in the forefront?
Well, actually, I'd been thinking of writing a book about my family, my parents, our war, our escape from Hong Kong, all of that, for many years. I didn't because my parents were still alive. So then I felt, yes, I know I've got to do it, but I didn't have the time as Governor General. Then I had my heart problem and got a pacemaker last July, and I thought, if I don't do this now, maybe I'll never get a chance to do it. So I did it.
And the heart pacemaker you're talking about, that figures into the title Heart Matters, amongst several other issues that you talk about in there, including, of course, your relationships with various family members and friends and so on.
Yeah.
You came to Canada as a very young child in the middle of the war with your Chinese family to a country that was essentially very white and Caucasian. And you succeeded tremendously. Throughout the book, I never got a sense of any racism. And racism nowadays, everybody's talking about racism. How did that work that you got through, and it's not a big deal?
I think, for one thing, we were in a war going on against the Japanese, and everybody knew in Ottawa, which was really a relatively small town then, less than 100,000 people, and my father had a little job in the federal government. And people knew about us and our story, and were extremely sympathetic to us. And we were like a novelty in many ways. You see, I think people get racist and get threatened when they see groups of people. I don't think people who come along and are three or four or whatever are really thought of as being any kind of threat. But the they is something that racist, that's very racialist, actually. And we just had a very warm welcome from people in Ottawa. We made friends right away. We made friends with the Jewish pharmacist. We made friends with a lot of French Canadians. I don't know that we ever felt as a family, I certainly never felt as a person, that people felt that I shouldn't do something or be anything because I was Chinese. In fact, you know, I was always encouraged by my family to go out and do everything.
So what does your personal story say to new arrivals in this country or potential new immigrants who may be listening in other countries?
I think for immigrants, people who are thinking of coming to Canada, I can say honestly that I think it's a country where you will be given a chance and where you will have a way to approach a life which is free, and that your children will get educated, and that it is a country of great interest and excitement, though it's not the United States, and it doesn't have a Florida, and it doesn't have a California. It has our north, and our climate is our character, actually. But I think that we had a wonderful go in Canada because my parents were so optimistic. But I think also that we knew that this was a great place, and my parents were happy if their children were happy, and that's what happened. Also, they pushed us. Mm-hmm. There's no question. I say at one point that failure was not an option, and I think that's true. And I think all immigrants, to a great extent, are like that. They want more for their children. They want their children to really perform. They want their children to do the best and to make their way with everybody or ahead of the pack. And I think that's something that we share, all immigrants.
You, of course, in your career were one of the biggest television personalities for many, many years. You hosted some of the most fabulous shows that this country had to produce. As somebody who knows all about television and what it can do for people and against them, in terms of politics, what do you think television has done for our political situation in the sense that we elect our politicians more on how they look on television as opposed to the depth of their policies?
I think we'd like to have the depth of their policies. It's just that we don't get politics with depth. And if we got that, I think we would work on that. Canadians, and that's how I found that traveling all over the country as Governor General, are generally so intelligent. It's not book learning. I don't mean they have BAs. It's, you know, some of them do, some of them don't. But they will have such good common sense, and they will understand about things. They will know about things. in a way which I think a lot of politicians dismiss or don't understand. But I think it's television's problem about the way they present politics. Everything is obsessing over things like scandals or disasters. That's generally the problem with television anyway. Today I saw something when I was waiting, some buildings collapsing in a town in the interior of China, you know, and 15 workmen were killed or something. How terrible. That is all we have heard about China for probably the last 3 days, all right, is that a building collapsed and killed 15 workmen. This is ridiculous. I mean, there is no idea of showing exactly how people live their lives. And that, I think, is a great
shame. But is that the fault of television itself, or is it the fault of us as consumers that we accept this?
No, I don't. What choice do we have? That's what's put on. And now television has declined to an extent which is, it makes it impossible almost to watch some shows. I'm glad that there are a lot of channels because then one can have some choice. But even so, you watch it and it's pretty desolate.
But, you know, you bring up an interesting point because here in Canada we have a mix of public and private media sources, both radio and television, and always have pretty much that coexist side by side. Other countries around the world are just starting to get into this private-public mix. State television has been the norm for most countries around the world. What do you see as the role for a public and or / state television in this new world, in all countries, ours as
well? Well, I think they should do what they've always done and leave other stuff to other people. I think, you know, where...
Other stuff.
Well, you know, I think, you know, idol shows.
Reality type.
Yeah, reality.
Alleged
type.
Reality.
Yeah, alleged reality, whatever that is. I hope it's not, you know, it's certainly not my reality, and I hope it's not many people's reality because it's pretty terrible. And I think that we should be doing, you know, the excellent current affairs and excellent news and excellent cultural programming.
Are people around the world getting enough news? Are they getting the right kind of news?
Well, they do in certain countries. They do, for instance, in Britain. Mm-hmm. They don't in France. They do, I think, in Holland. You know, it's sketchy, but it happens. And I think it's very, you know, excellent in all Scandinavian countries. I think, though, that we don't trust ourselves to do good things because we're so overshadowed by the Americans.
You mean as Canadians?
Because we think, oh, they do that. You know, they do Fox television, therefore we should do something like Fox. And I think we don't have the sense of confidence that we might have. Whereas in Quebec, they have a confidence in their own culture. Mm-hmm. They have a confidence that they, you know, can do news for themselves, that they can do the best arts. And that's what manages to happen in Quebec, and it doesn't happen in the rest of Canada.
Well, let's talk about arts, because you, of course, are a huge fan of the arts, a promoter of the arts, the Canadian arts scene. How important is it for a society, a culture, to promote its arts? We don't do enough of that, as you say,
well,
in English Canada.
Well, I think we're just completely behind the eight ball there because any country, a realistic country like the French and so and the Italians, they realize their culture is them. Their culture reflects them as people. And our literature reflects us. It's just that everyone should be looking at it. But we produce the most fabulous literature. I'm just now on the Giller jury for the fiction prize, the Giller Fiction Prize, which is the really very fine prize. So I've read dozens of books this summer and have the conclusion that we are doing the most marvelous writing. And I think that we have not gotten to the point where we trust ourselves and our own creativity. We're very aw shucks about it all. And
but hasn't
silly.
That always been the case in Canada? We're always self-deprecating and we're always being
yeah,
inundated.
Yeah, because we moved from being a colony of Britain to being a colony of the United States without a pause in between. And so I think that we have to take ourselves in hand and say, you know, that's not the way it is. We are really Canadian. And I think it's coming. I'm more optimistic than not.
As Governor General, I notice in the book, you come again from the TV background where there's a lot of informality and people often address each other by their first names and so on and so forth. As Governor General, I noticed in the book that you are very defensive about tradition and formality. Talk to me about that.
Well, I don't believe in empty formality, but I think tradition helps to sustain the office and gives it respect. It has nothing to do with pomposity. It has to do with understanding exactly what you are and how you pay the dues to the things that make you what you are.
Mm-hmm. Do Canadians understand the role of the Governor General in our political structure?
Canadians don't understand it, but they should read the Constitution because there they'll find that the Governor General is very, very mentioned. as basically where the buck stops, and that the word prime minister never appears in the Constitution. Governor general is somebody who guarantees that there will always be a government. If something happens to the prime minister, the governor general has to make sure that there is another prime minister.
When you took over this role and function, there wasn't a guideline, a guidebook for you to follow to say this is what you do and this is what you don't do.
No, there's nothing like that. There's nothing. People are always amazed and they say, surely there's something. There isn't, except constitutional history, mm-hmm. except Canadian history. And I certainly, you know, having studied that at university, I know a lot about Canadian history. And then there was you read up about all the governors general and what they had done. I was very fortunate in that I had constitutional experts who I consulted a lot. And that was always a help because constitutional experts can give you a lot of advice. Now, they didn't always agree. And that's where your margin
is. Nor does the law agree about a lot of things.
No, that's right. Yeah. And it's always up to the moment in history and the individual who's holding the office to make that work.
Madam Clarkson, we only have a few moments left. You were the Governor General for 6 years. You traveled across this country dozens of times. You traveled around the world meeting people and representing the country. What are some of the things that you have taken from this role?
I think what I've taken is basically that Canadians are not as different as they like to think they are, or as sometimes our politicians tell them we are. That people in the West have something in common with people in Saguenay-Lac-Saint-Jean and with people in Newfoundland, just to name three. And that is that they have a worry that their traditional way of life is going to mean that they cannot stay where they love to be, which is where they have been born and where they like to make their life. And the reason why they can't is that their kids are going to move away, is
looking
in great
for work
danger,
elsewhere.
Looking for work mm-hmm. elsewhere.
But isn't this the case around the world? I mean, people are leaving the countryside to go to the cities and countries around the world. Are
well,
we different in that way? Or
I think we are a little bit different because the way we hold together our country, which is the second largest in the world, is with having people in every place. And we don't want to see any part of it depopulated. And it just puts an unnatural balance into things. It may be that other people have their problems and that they are similar to ours. But we must, I think, address our own and look at that. And that's what was interesting about doing that for 6 years, was I was able to point out to people that they were more similar than they were dissimilar.
Mm. Madam Clarkson, you do like quotations. Do you have a final quotation for us?
Well, I love quotations, but I guess one of the ones I love most, and I used to quote a great deal, I didn't put it into the book, is from Churchill, who said that courage is the most important human quality because it is the one that guarantees all the others.
Madam Adrienne Clarkson, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure.